On Sunday, June 25th at 11 p.m., Sugar My Bowl presents tenor saxophonist, composer, and band leader James Brandon Lewis. Join us as we discuss JBL's latest release with his trio, No Filter, and other highlights from his career. That's Sunday, June 25th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones. And our guest for this evening is tenor saxophonist and composer James Brandon Lewis. Stay tuned. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
You've been acting different, I've been told. Soothe me, I want some sugar in my bowl. On my clothes, maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. My bow.
my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
James Brandon Lewis.
James Brandon Lewis, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Yes, and thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, I sort of want to get this out of the way first, because this is the thing that got my attention. You had a gig with Sonny Rollins.
Yes, well, it was a Sonny Rollins tribute, of which he requested myself and other esteemed saxophonists to participate in the tribute of his music.
How'd that happen?
Well, it proved that Sonny Rollins is still listening to music, still listening, still growing. That happened in April. I was contacted by John Faddis, who organized the concert for Sonny Rollins.
Yes, the trumpeter. And
it was great. I had fun. Unfortunately, Sonny Rollins wasn't able to attend. He's getting older and stuff like that. You know.
Did you ever find out how your name was on his radar?
My name has been on his radar for a while.
Okay.
It's just here in the United States. I mean, he's mentioned me in articles overseas since my first record on Sony, Divine Travel, because we briefly shared the same record label, which is OK Records.
Right.
And so he was aware of me from that. So it was cool.
Cool.
But at least since 2014, he's been aware of me. I'm thankful, but the word is out.
Yeah, everybody else is slow. That's what's up.
I don't know if everyone else is slow, but at least here in the United States, things are pushed in a certain direction, and people tend to go that way. So big ups to Sonny for putting in the word and having me on his concert.
That's so cool. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You were born in Buffalo, New York, huh?
I was born in Buffalo, New York, yep, 1983.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have a day, too, because there's sort of like this general information for you. It just says, born in 1983. It's like, oh, really?
August 13th.
That's right. Your family, you most importantly, were active in your church.
Yeah, I was active in Metropolitan United Methodist Church right there in Buffalo, across the street from the Buffalo Science Museum that also holds jazz concerts throughout the summer. And I used to attend those, and Albright Knox Art Gallery. My mom used to take me there. Yeah, I've been involved in the church, and my education music-wise started when I was 9 and played clarinet. And after that, picked up the saxophone, and I attended the Buffalo Academy for the Visual and Performing Arts from 5th grade to 12th. Yeah, so church and all that kind of stuff, jazz, a lot of cool music happening in Buffalo.
You have this quote that I read. It says, for me, I'm just blowing air through a horn, a metal tube, and if I can be in tune with that vibration and in that freedom, that Holy Ghost, that always takes me to those places that are beyond words, then I'm good. And I've heard William Parker talk about the Holy Ghost, and I've talked to Kid Jordan about the Holy Ghost. So I'm going to ask you, could you tell me about your connection with the Holy Ghost?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've always had a relationship with God and the church, and those moments that happen in church that are unexplainable, it's sometimes beyond understanding, where you just sort of lose sight of time and you're present, but not really. You're kind of just in another world and something takes over you. And I felt that, you know, some people call that inspiration. Some people call that energy. You know, I describe it that way, but I also describe it as the Holy Spirit, you know, that which is connected to God and the Trinity.
Right.
Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And, you know, once that spirit is in the room, that vibe, that thing that's unexplainable where you're almost not fully present within your body when that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just kind of going with, it's hard to explain because when I'm playing and that feeling happens, it's not anything that, I mean, most of the time I don't even remember what I play after I reach that point. And I think sometimes those are the moments that I think people who are in touch with the spirituality that we kind of aim for every time to be completely immersed on such a level where you just kind of just floating downstream. You're just letting it happen. And sometimes I get there and sometimes I don't. But at least that's the goal. You know, a lot of people say getting beyond the notes. And I can agree with that. I can get to that headspace, but I think also it's more having yourself aligned. Like playing saxophone is such a physical thing, or playing any instrument can be very physical where you just, you know, I know me personally, it's nice when I'm not so present and I allow myself to just go, because too present within, then it's just a piece of metal within my hand. But when I reach that other place, it's very fluid. It's almost like the saxophone is another limb or a part of me, and then I can just float to that other place and not be so kind of stuck.
And by the way, Kid Jordan, he was saying, as did William Parker, that being accessible to that energy is definitely important in this music.
Oh, yeah. Definitely being open. I'm thankful that I've always kept my connection with those things that you can't really explain.
Right.
You know, because a lot of times in school, you know, I come from a generation that has been going to school for music. And, I mean, that's cool, but that doesn't really speak to music as a way of life, a philosophy, a way of being in the world. It's more of like, at times can be just caught up too much in the details. And that's not really the essence of what music can be. Theories and formulas and all this kind of stuff, it's relevant, but it doesn't help you see the beauty that music has in the world that it's presented in. It's more, you know, day-to-day kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm just thankful I kept my connection, and I'm thankful that the two gentlemen you spoke of, I have relationships with to help me through that and help me understand that there's real power in music as opposed to some kind of mechanical lip service. Those kind of cliches, music can heal the world and all this kind of stuff, when actually those two individuals that you referred to really do affect lives when they're playing.
This is true.
Yes.
And a lot of lives have been affected by their playing and their teaching and just their existence.
Yes, definitely.
In all these years, I guess that's why they call me the blessed child. We all branch out for experience. But if you know that bass that ain't killing, create civil rights, men create that. And so I never felt that the world helped me. I felt that God helped me. And that God was all my life.
Having that foundation, I also think of family or slash community. Right. How important is that ingredient for you as an artist?
Well, let me address the first part, family. I've been blessed. You know, I have family members that really support me. You know, my mom and my dad, my brother and my sister, stepmom and grandparents.
Are they musical?
My mom is musical. I would say that my dad can. He definitely knows how to sing in the key.
Uh-huh.
My grandma, definitely musical.
Uh-huh.
But they're not professionals.
Right.
You know, like, my mom is a very talented singer and artist, but she went and was a teacher. Her dad, you know, just a different generation. She wasn't necessarily allowed to pursue her artistic mode of operation because her
right.
dad was like, well, you know, you got to go be a teacher.
Right.
You know, and then.
So she taught music?
No, she didn't teach music. She
oh.
taught science and math
okay.
and
okay.
The fifth graders. And my dad is a minister, a Baptist minister.
Right.
Thank you.
at my grandma, she can sing. You know, a lot of people in my family can actually hum a tune.
Uh-huh.
You know? I would say that they're all supportive of my endeavors, and that's helped me a bunch in terms of if someone doesn't like a recording I've done, at least I know that my family digs what I do. Mm-hmm. And so that's really supportive. And as far as community is concerned, I will say that that's kind of a twofold thing. I will say that there's a community of people that have helped shape my mindset and have helped my confidence. And there have been people who have kept me alive, too, here in the big city, New York. And so I will say that, like, for example, prior to me moving to New York, I was living in California, and I had mentors and different people who were integral in my development, like, of course, Wadada Leo Smith at Calard, and then Alfonso Johnson, bass player that used to be in Weather Report. Mm-hmm. He also taught at Calard. And I actually, after I graduated from there, I was in his group, and we were playing original Weather Report stuff that he would bring in. So that was 2 years after I finished grad school. Also, James Newton. I had a lot of interactions with him, and between James Newton and Wadada Leo Smith, and then eventually Matthew Shipp, who I met in 2011, those three individuals encouraged me to move to New York.
Oh, I see.
That really helped me to have a community that encouraged my goals and aspirations. And so it was really vital for me to have that. And then once I got to New York and via Matthew Shipp, was introduced to William Parker, Gerald Cleaver, and then the whole Arts for Art community. It was great. I remember my first couple experiences in New York, having played at a rehearsal, William Parker large ensemble rehearsal. I think at the time they had just gotten back from, I think they were in Montreal, and this is when Mr. Parker was doing the Ellington Project. But I had just moved to New York in 2012, and uh-huh. That's when I met them. I was able to meet Roy Campbell, who I had already knew about with his work, having worked with Matthew Shipp.
The trumpeter.
Yes. So my first experiences when I first got to New York, he took me to the Village Vanguard and he invited me to a jam session and different things like that. So it was really great. I had a good network community of people. Also, Patricia Parker in volunteering. I used to volunteer for Arts for Art and the Vision Festival, and I still help out when I can. So that was important. And it was also in 2011 because I met Matthew Shipp at a residency at the Atlantic Center for the Arts in Florida. That's also where I met my other collaborator, Thomas Ayers Ellis, the poet.
Yes.
So all those entities helped me. The community for me is, at least when it comes to, there is the community of musicians and artists in relationships with each other, and then there's the community in which the music is presented and the people who attend concerts. I will say that it's been great to have a community of musicians and artists that I can have relationships with, that we look out for each other. Whereas, you know, a lot of times within this city, if you don't have a network of people, you can't really, in order to survive, you know, jobs, some gigs might be through recommendation.
Right.
Or knowing what's happening around the city, you know, it helps to. And this is something I learned from Matthew Shipp. When I asked him about when he moved to New York, he said, well, when I moved to New York, I knew who I wanted to play with. And I said, wow. Him saying that was very inspirational for me when I moved to New York in 2012, that I knew who I wanted to play with. I knew who I wanted to work with. I knew the community that I wanted to embrace, and they embraced me. That's another beautiful thing, is that vibration is not only having to do with the mapping of oneself, being in tune with music from an internal and external place, but it's also, I would say, the community that has embraced me in New York. We all have a similar vibration.
Yes.
You know, that we can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Our vibration's connected.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned when you were in California, attending CalArts. Mm-hmm. First off, how did you wind up going to CalArts?
Well, so I did my undergrad at Howard University. I think when I was in high school, this is a really long story, but I can sum it up with basically saying that when I graduated from high school, my mom, as a present, took me on a vacation. She took me on a cruise. Wow, my mom is taking me on a cruise. You know, we kind of flabbergasted because, you know, I didn't grow up in like some kind of lavish situation, but you know, middle class, that still existed. I don't know if that still does, but anyway, so I met this saxophone player, and this is before me going to Howard. And before Howard, I spent 1 year at Buffalo State College, so I transferred to Howard.
Okay.
Most people don't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I met this sax player. His name is Kelly Corbin. Shout out to Kelly. He's still playing and got a doctorate in music and teaches somewhere in California. But Kelly Corbin was playing sax on his cruise ship, and he was killing. You know, and I was like, I was a young guy, you know, and I mean, I was high school age. I was like, wow, man, this cat can play. And I was there like almost every night that I could hear him play. I was like right there. And eventually we kept in touch, and he stayed in California. And then next thing you know, once I was at Howard and I was about to finish and me and Kelly had kept in contact, he was telling me about CalArts. And I was like, wow, CalArts. I was like, oh, okay. I said, well, maybe I'll apply to CalArts, man. Sounds like a cool school, you know? And I applied while I was at Howard, and I didn't get in. I eventually ended up, after Howard, moving out to Colorado, where my dad lives. And I was doing gospel music, like, pretty full-time.
Hmm.
Eventually, after having played lots of gospel concerts and festivals, and then I won Dorinda Clark Cole's Singers and Musicians Conference.
Oh, wow.
In Detroit. I won like best instrumentalist or whatever. So
wow.
I was like, on this road. I was like on this road to like be this gospel sax player. And
oh,
then,
the gospel fast track. Okay.
Yeah. And so I've always had very eclectic taste.
Uh-huh.
So for me, I've always been curious, and I always go with my curiosity rather than some sort of mandate or dictate from someone trying to tell me what to do. Eventually, I apply to CalArts again, and I get in. Now, before this, I was at the University of Denver Lamont School of Music. I had applied there. I was getting my master's from there. Long story short, after getting the 3.6, they didn't have any financial aid for me, scholarships. So I was like, well, I got to leave because, I mean, it was expensive school.
Sure.
And I ended up leaving the school, and I went out to CalArts, and my world was just blown away at the amount of different things that I hadn't been exposed to previously. We're talking like the AACM. We're mm-hmm. talking Ornette Coleman, Sun Ra. We're talking about John Cage and
wow.
Harry Park. And just a huge eclectic. That school was one of the most amazing schools I ever went to, because not only did I get to study with Vidada, but I had to study with Charlie Hayden.
I was going to ask you about him. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. lucky you.
Yeah, Dola Barber, which was the last drummer to play with Bill Evans, Alfonso Johnson,
yeah.
Dart Oles, just all these amazing professors. And then they had the world music program. And then that's when I was able to, it was like required for me to take Ghanaian drumming.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, there's just so much things going on at the school. And that's also where Robbie Coltrane went to school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
CalArts. It was just a really rich school. And I just learned so much and was so thankful to be there, because at that school, I could not only play with my professors, but be in ensembles with them. And then that school gave me the freedom to be able to compose. It gave me the freedom to be able to play gospel, straight ahead, you know, all these categories to classify 12 notes. So I was able to do that, and that was cool, you know. And then eventually I ended up in New York.
Now, you mentioned studying with Charlie Hayden, because Charlie Hayden had this class, he told me, that it was about improvisation. And
mm-hmm.
the way he was talking about it, I don't even think there's a book for it, because he pretty much created the program himself.
He created the jazz program.
Yeah.
That's correct. I was in the jazz program at CalArts, mm-hmm. and I mean, I took his class every semester with the exception of one. And when I didn't that particular semester, he said, man, you can take that class anytime. So, I was taking someone else's class. And but his class was really, it wasn't theoretical. Like, we would go over tunes that he has played, but it wasn't really theoretical. It was more to deal with life and him telling us about, you know, the joys and beauties and hardships of life. And it was definitely spirituality and improvisation. It definitely wasn't like we're in class going over 2-5-1s or something like that. I mean, that just wasn't the class.
Right.
He would come in and just tell us about his family, tell us about his background, tell us about his grandkids, tell us about a tour he went on, or, you know, he was just such a beautiful cat, and I really enjoy thoroughly soaking it all up in. And on top of that, he had amazing ears. Like, he knew, and he wouldn't forget. Like, I remember one summer, I think I had told him before the school ended, I said, Charlie, you know, I'm checking out Dewey Redman and Wardo Gray. And then the next year, you know, he could tell. He could hear it. He was like, man. And he just, like, knew. Oh, yeah, I hear that Dewey and that Wardo, you know. And he was just so encouraging. I mean, that's the thing with Keller. All the professors there were just so encouraging. Like, okay, cool, James. Is that what you want to do? Is that what you want to explore? Cool. You know, but then they would have you explore to the nth degree.
Mm.
It's one thing to explore. It's another thing to explore and then put your all into that exploration.
Mm.
That's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Especially like when I would bring my compositions to Wadada, and me and him would sit, we'd be sitting at the piano, and he would ask me in-depth questions. Okay, how many intervals is this? And why don't you expand the interval? And why don't you do this? So many ideas. Mm. You know, that's the thing that's inspiring is that I didn't have professors who were like trying to tell me, well, everything has been done. Mm. They never act like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always kept the ball moving forward, which is why they're still creating to this day, still pushing the envelopes.
Wow.
Every time I have a conversation with Dada, even now, it's kind of like he's still pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. There's no let up. So, yeah, it was great.
listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar and My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. And our guest for this evening is James Brandon Lewis. What you're listening to right now is Cinto, the James Brandon Lewis Quintet, from his debut release as a leader, Moments. That's self-released, James Brandon Lewis in 2010. James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Neil Cogan on guitar, Ben Shepherd on bass, Robert Holiday on piano, and John Shibalin on drums. Before that, we heard A Gathering of Souls from James Brandon Lewis's 2014 OK Records release, Divine Travels. James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, William Parker on acoustic bass, and Gerald Cleaver on drums. Before that, we heard Lament for J. Lou in dedication to James Brandon Lewis's father. That's from James Brandon Lewis's 2015 OK Records release, Days of Free Men. James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Jamela Dean Takuma on electric bass, and Rudy Royston on drums. Before that, we heard another selection from Days of Free Men, Break 2, which features James Brandon Lewis's grandmother. Before that, we heard I Want Jesus to Walk With Me, another selection from Moments, the James Brandon Lewis Quintet. That's 2010 James Brandon Lewis release. Before that, we heard from the James Brandon Lewis Trio, his latest release, No Filter, which was released in 2016 on BNS Sessions. The selection is called Zen. That's James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Luke Stewart on electric bass, Warren G. Trey Crudup on drums. And, of course, we opened our program with Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from the compilation The Very Best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. Originally recorded in 1967, this is a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
So I'm going to bring up a release that you didn't mention, Moments.
Oh, Moments.
Yeah, how important was that for you to document that at that time?
Moments, I would say that I reflect on Moments a lot now because when I go back and listen, which I don't like doing, I don't like going back and listening to myself. But when I do, when I listen to Moments, it has the blueprint for everything I'm creating now.
Yes.
You can hear gospel influence stuff on there. You can hear hip hop on there. It was almost like I was doing things that now are pretty trendy. And I don't want to say trendy. Trendy is the wrong word. Trendy would be anybody born in the 2000s trying to create old school hip hop. That's trendy.
Okay.
I would say that the people in my generation who are doing hip hop stuff grew up with the music in their household.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that that's less of a trend and more to do with their ears of being able to hear something naturally. not try to recreate it. It was a part of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't like a hip hop head, but it was around.
Right.
But I will say that Moments in general, Moments was a really great album for several different reasons. Number one, I decided after 2009, when a aunt of mine died, that I was no longer waiting on the magical phone call to be an artist or to get my music out there. Because she led by example, she got a lot of stuff done. She wasn't waiting on anybody to do it. She was getting it done. She had her own businesses.
Wow.
And she was getting it done. And so when I did Moments, I pieced together funds from different places and, you know, my family, my grandma, different people who believe in me. And that album did pretty good, actually. For me to self-publish, it was like it got featured in the Revive OK Player situation in 2010 when they first launched. I did an interview with George Mason University. I got featured on E-Jazz News,
okay,
which is now pretty big. So all of these little seedlings I had already had back in 2010. And then I sent the album to anybody who would listen. I think I sent that album to anybody who would listen. I remember sending it to Javon Jackson.
Wow.
I remember sending it to anybody in New York who would listen.
Mm-hmm.
I sent that album to Matthew Shipp. I mean, I sent that album to anybody who would listen.
It's okay.
And every week in grad school, I would spend my work study money to mail it out,
wow,
you know, because I was proud of it. I was happy for it. And
sure.
It got some pretty good reviews. It got featured on All About Jazz, too, and it made people aware of my playing.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for June 25th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's guest is saxophonist James Brandon Lewis, who you can see at Brooklyn's Shoals Street Studio on July 1st. And we have more listings for you this week. We start with WBGO Radio, which has a continuing visual art exhibit featuring works produced by musicians. It's on view at their downtown Newark, New Jersey studio, and features the work of Will Calhoun, Mino Cinellu, Dick Griffin, Oliver Lake, and Carmen Lindy, among others. Drummer Roy Haynes is at Sub Rosa with pianist Eddie Palmieri on June 26th. Charlie Hayden's Liberation Music Orchestra, led by pianist Carla Blay, is at the Blue Note on the 27th. Hammond B3 Organ Master Dr. Lonnie Smith is at the Jazz Standard from the 27th through July 2nd. Bassist Dave Holland leads a trio at the Village Vanguard from the 27th through the 2nd. Looking a little further ahead, saxophonist Gary Bartz is at the Blue Note on the 28th with pianist McCoy Tyner. Saxophonist Salim Washington is at Harlem's Farafina Cafe on July 1st. Drummer and percussionist Bobby Sanabria and Ascension have a free outdoor concert at the One Bronx Festival on July 2nd at the corner of Westchester and 3rd Avenues. The One Bronx Festival website has your details on that. Bassist Ron Carter is at Smoke from July 7th through 9th and the Blue Note from the 11th through the 16th. Saxophonist Sweet Papa Lou Donaldson is at the Blue Note from the 6th through the 9th. Bassist William Parker's In Order to Survive is at Brooklyn's Shapeshifter Lab on the 13th through the 14th. Finally, saxophonist Renee McLean is at Brooklyn's Sister's Place on the 15th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also up on the website. And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. If you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website for details. This is Hank Williams signing off with our bi-weekly schedule. We're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, July 9th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Hi, this is Charnette Moffett. You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Moment. At the time, it was very eclectic.
Uh-huh.
I don't think people really knew how to categorize it. Now it would just be whatever it is. But
right.
That's an album I talk about more often than anything because a lot
really?
Of times in articles. Yeah, because a lot of times in articles it ain't mentioned, and they
no, exactly.
Like, listen, I'm not the person. I'm not a writer. I don't write the articles. You know,
uh-huh.
I let the writers do the writing, but.
But see,
you know,
I thought it was your first release as a leader.
It is my first release as a leader.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is that people try to make Divine Travels my first release.
Oh, right. Exactly.
You know what I mean? When
exactly.
Divine Travels is not the first release.
No.
And Moments is actually a good album because I'm not like some young guy playing sax. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm in grad school. I started grad school when I was like 25. So I was like 26, 27 years old. Still fairly young, but not fresh out of undergrad.
Right, right. Actually,
you know
I was curious
I mean?
About that. You recorded it in Valencia, California. Did the personnel
That's
consist
right.
of classmates and local guys that you gigged with at the time? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it consisted of a variety, but mainly classmates, other people getting grad degrees. It also included this really young bass player who, not young anymore, but who plays with everybody now in L.A., this cat Ben Shepherd, who is currently playing with so many people out in L.A. I'm drawing a blank. But
nope.
Definitely names that you would know for sure.
Sure.
And then one faculty member, Susie Allen, rest
oh.
in peace.
Okay, Susie Allen Harp.
Yeah, she's on the harp. That was my first time playing with harp, you know.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, man, this is awesome. Wow, man, I really thank you for asking me about Moment. You know, it's really actually a pretty good album. But
I think
I can
it
hear
is.
The mistakes on it.
Yeah, well, yeah, looking back now. But like you said, it was planting the seeds of what you've become
yeah, it
today.
Was, it was planting the seeds. I mean, I have yeah. I Want Jesus to Walk With Me on there.
Yes, yes.
I have this Esento.
Yes.
That's really like hip-hop, but then we go free. But
mm-hmm.
I wasn't calling it free. I
right.
was just saying we wasn't following no changes and not like that.
I really like I Remember South Africa. That's a good one, too.
Thank you.
yeah, long story short, 2005, I went to South Africa on a missions trip to Johannesburg, and I worked in a shack settlement outside of Johannesburg called Deep Sloot. And while I was there, some kids would, I can't even remember the language they were singing, but they were singing a melody. Say baba yana, say le matusu yana, oh. And I never forgot that. And I remember them telling me that that means that God has given us this time and this moment. And so years later, when I was in grad school and I wanted to reflect on that time period, and I was like, wow, okay. I remember South Africa. And the only thing that I don't like about that piece in general is that that style of drumming isn't, that's not South African.
Oh, okay.
The style of drumming on there.
I think you had djembes or something, didn't you?
Yeah. So I can't remember exactly the instrumentation, but it's definitely not. And that was the only thing that kind of like, I mean.
Nobody knows. But I hear you. I hear you completely.
We didn't have anybody at the school who was playing like, you know. So anyway, actually that, I recorded that. Again, that piece got me. Every year, CalArts does this thing where you record a Capitol record. And so that piece itself is recorded differently. Capitol, it's on a compilation album. It's just called like CalArts Annual Jazz Album or something like that, 2010. You can find it.
Oh, okay.
For sure.
Okay.
And Moments is, it's funny, dude, because the title track is probably the happiest song I ever wrote in my life.
And I was thinking, it's like, this does not sound like a guy who wears black all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that one, too.
I mean, I remember when I wrote it, it was, I had a new lease on life. I felt renewed. And, you know, when I listen to it, it brings me back to a familiar, happy place in my life. You know, we all have trials and tribulations.
Sure.
The thing about me is that I try to live what I play about.
Yes.
And I try to have integrity.
Yes.
You know, and I try to be honest. So if I write a piece of music like that, in that moment, I was being honest with how I felt. And so I don't get down about it. I kind of be like, oh, okay. You know, that's the way I was feeling.
Now, when did you know that you were ready to record Divine Travels?
I don't know if I was ready. I know that Matthew Shipp, when I was at the Atlantic Center for the Art, he had brought in some guys, Michael Welch and Doug Matthews, who had played with Sam Rivers, because Sam Rivers lived in Florida the later years of his life. And so he had brought this bass and drum player who played with Sam Rivers. And that was the first time in my life I had just played with bass and drum. And so I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I remember being like a kid in the candy store where finally I could control my melodic line and I didn't have to have like a harmonic instrument trying to dictate where I should go.
And the bass player turned out to be William Parker and the drummer was Gerald Cleaver.
You're right, on Divine Travels. And yeah. So eventually, after that experience with the encouragement of Matthew Shipp, he said, well, you should record with William Parker and Gerald Cleaver. And I said, well, that was like in May 2011. I went back home to California. At first, I was like, well, they don't know me. Why would they record with me? And in my mind, I wasn't like, but then I started to believe in myself and believe that I could make this happen some kind of way. And then they eventually agreed. And it was a beautiful experience. I went out to eventually record that in 2011 in November. And see, this is another thing that most people don't know, is I recorded that album in 2011.
I'm hearing, and the release date was 2014.
Yeah, that means that it sat for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And a lot of labels said no. And it was interesting because this is another thing that is fascinating to the story, is that when the OK label came out, it was introduced that they were bringing that label back. Lo and behold, the guy who I had sent Moments to in 2010 just so happened to be a guy who was going to be heading OK.
Wow.
In 2014. So I had this album that everyone said no to in my possession, and I reached out to them. I said, hey, I understand that you have the OK label. You're heading in. I said, well, I have this recording I did with William Parker and Gerald Cleaver in 2011. It hasn't been released yet. Would you want to listen? And he says, sure. And I didn't hear from him. And I was right on the verge of just releasing it myself. I said, well, I wrote to him. I didn't hear from him, so I was nervous. And I was thinking, well, I guess it's not going to happen. I'm just going to have to release it myself, which wouldn't have been a bad idea because it was just sitting. It was just sitting there.
Right.
And he wrote back. He said, oh, my goodness, I didn't get back with you. The record is amazing.
Oh, sweat.
And, you know, the rest is history. It came out and I got signed with OK and it was great.
And
was
you released another one.
Days of Freeman,
yes.
Which is biographical. And,
it was also supposedly, if I remember it correctly, what I've read, it was an exploration into hip hop.
Yes, it was. Days of Freeman definitely was. I grew up on Freeman Street in Buffalo, New York, and it was definitely exploration. Rudy Royston, Jamal Dean Takuma.
Yeah.
Really, heavyweight.
How'd they wind up on there?
I was aware of Jamal Dean through, obviously, his work with Prime Time, and then someone recommended me to him. And then I met Rudy Royston playing with J.D. Allen.
Okay.
The world of music is small. There's no mystery to any of this.
I mean, J.D. was doing a lot of Revive stuff as well.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But I really like that one. Yeah. That was actually my introduction to your music, Days of Freeman, aside from seeing you at Vision. But I meant as a recorded artist initially.
Right.
Then I had to backtrack.
Right. It's all good. Yeah, Days of Freeman, it's interesting because I remember reading a comment one time that said, there are some contingencies out there. Some people want you to make the same record over and over and over again. And I'm not that kind of person, so that's not going to happen. And with the addition of electric bass, people always get kind of weirded out or freaked out by it. But I...
What? Why?
I mean, maybe because they have whatever they think is the, you know, Divine Travels was avant-garde and this Days of Freeman seems to be, you know, and it was almost viewed as... I mean, it's crazy. That album is... quote unquote critically acclaimed, but it got swept under the Kumasi explosion.
Okay. And, timing was everything.
Yeah, I mean, timing. I released my album, I think, a month before or a month after the Epic.
Which really amazes me because there is certainly room on the planet for Kumasi and you and everybody else who's playing.
And everybody else. I mean, I definitely agree. Exactly. I mean, props to everybody, you know, out here trying to do music. But I think that with Days of Freeman, in some sense, I felt like the record was slept on, even though it did well and people wrote about it and NPR covered it. And mm-hmm. No, I still felt like the depth of it, the layeredness of it, having
yes.
my grandmother
yes.
kind of narrate.
I was just
throughout.
Going to say that. That was the first thing. Your grandmother was not to be missed.
And then all of the references musically.
Yes.
Like, if you're not really astute in... I mean, I was fully immersed in that project. There mm-hmm. was a lot that went into it.
Sure.
There's a lot of layering, intros, outros,
interludes. Yes.
Just everything about it being seamless and more of a story, more of an artistic piece as opposed to me just going in the studio. I mean, that's boring mm-hmm. for me. Just going in the studio, cutting a bunch of tunes and then slapping some words on it. No, this was like some in-depth kind of study and kind of once again just shows the history of myself, the progression of my music. If you go back to Moment, every other album speaks to the next direction.
Yes, this is true.
If you go back to Moment, it kind of forecasted Divine Travels with Jesus Walks With Me. If you go back to Moment, Cento is almost the blueprint for Days of Freeman.
Yes.
And now Days of Freeman with Lament for J. Lou, Dedication to My Father, is forecast to No Filter, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So this isn't some sort of, oh, well, now he's doing this. No, I've been pretty consistent with my integrity level of what I'm about since my first album.
Very true.
You're going to get a barrage of different influences and different styles. So, yeah, Days of Freeman was pretty extensive.
And you know,
exhausting.
It is definitely clear that there is a thread, that there is a consistency, that you are becoming truer to your voice as
right.
your recordings progress.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I think about Days of Freeman and I think about the work, my mind gets tired. I just remember the amount of hours watching documentaries, checking out different albums. I checked out so many different albums of jazz musicians, not only just hip-hop musicians, of jazz musicians trying to do hip-hop. I checked out so many.
Right.
I mean, Russell Gunn, Courtney Pine, Branford Marcellus's attempt.
Right.
Greg Osby, Hedris Avery. I checked out so many albums. And it was just sort of like when I was reading some, you know, not that I care because I don't care. You know, I know how much work I put in. But when you pay attention to the chess moves of this music industry, you kind of like, wow, like you all are judging my album. But how many people know? I'll give you one example and then I'll leave it at this. At the end of Days of Freeman, there's an epilogue.
Yes.
And then that epilogue is a repeat of the very beginning, and then it expands.
Right.
So I go, how many people know that that next phrase is me expanding the melody from Tribe Called Quest, I believe, Midnight Marauders, off that album, 8 Million Stories, where it goes, I expand that phrase at the end of the epilogue to make it my own. And most people don't even catch that because they're not hip hop people. They're not even listening to the fact me and the bass are doing a counterpoint after we go, and then I go, and then I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
this counterpoint happening, that album was a lot of work. Yeah, I mean, all the albums are a lot of work, but specifically that one was is very multi-layered. Once again, it's not up to me to write the stuff or make the stuff. It's just for me to be a vessel. Maybe people acknowledge, and one day, you know, if they do, they do. If they don't, that's cool. I just got to keep doing what I do.
That is true.
No Filter, yeah.
No Filter.
No Filter.
It was released in October last year. BNS Sessions.
Yes.
What is BNS Sessions?
Yes. BNS Sessions is basically an independent record label that, long story short, I was involved in, speaking of musical influences, I was involved in a marionette production called Dvorak in America that was held at La Mama Experimental Theater last March 2016. And that basically led me down the exploration of studying the music of Antonin and Dvorak, and that was really amazing. That being said, I met somebody who attended the show who has his record label, and he came to one of the performances, and we just sparked up a conversation, and he was like, oh, well, I got a record label, and I was like, oh, really? Okay. At that time, I had been let go from Sony.
Yeah. By the way, how did they tell you? Because I just found out a recording artist, they sent her an email to tell her that she was dropped.
I think it was an email and an official letter.
Anyway.
Yeah. The way I see it is that the week after they did that, that next week, I'm not into polls, but, you know, just for the sake of the argument of record labels and decision making, I was like number three in the polls for Best New Artist in Jazz Pond.
I heard Roy Campbell had something to do with this project as well, the Dvorak
and
the marionettes.
He did. Rest in peace, Roy Campbell.
Yes.
So Roy Campbell was going to serve as the musical director for this production, and then he unfortunately passed, and William Parker recommended me for the opportunity, of which I was determined to give my all and take on the charge. Thinking about Roy Cam, I definitely didn't want to let him down and give my all and not be slacking. Somebody attended one of the shows, and he had a record label, and sparked up a conversation, and I didn't actually know when my next album was going to come out, but I was like, okay, well, cool, like, let's try to get it done, and that's how that situation happened, and so I recorded the album in September, and it was out in October.
How'd you meet the other members of the trio? Warren G. Trey Crudup the Third on drums, and Luke Stewart on bass.
Oh, and Anthony?
Yes, yes. Is he official now?
Well, yeah. Anthony is an amazing player, and there's going to be more work in the future, definitely, for Anthony and the group and what I'm trying to do. But I met Luke Stewart, I think, around 2012, early 2013. He was playing with Ross Moshe. Actually playing with Ross Moshe and Will Connell at the Breck Forum here in New York. And I was like, wow, like, these cats are killing, you know? And I was really impressed by his playing. So I was like, you know, determined to see who he was. And then from there, I met Warren, Trey, I call him Trey, through Luke. And the rest is history. And then I met Anthony Pirro, who did this gig or a record session with William Hooker. So that's how that happened. And we just sort of hit it off, you know? We just all had similar desires and influences, you know, different influences, going in, going all the way in, you know, bringing 110. So that was that.
So when I first heard you with the trio, it was actually at Park.
Oh, Madison Square Park.
Yes.
Right. Which was right across the street from Sony.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a good gig.
It was fun. It was really great. And we then saw you at the Cell. You were opening. Oh, God. There were like three groups there, I think. Harriet Tubman was the closer, I think.
Yep. And, and Rob Reddy's group.
Yeah, that was some night.
Yeah.
But that was, we
definitely
couldn't wait for No Filter. At Madison Square Park, you had done Raise Up Off Me.
Raise Up Off?
You sample from Gary Bart's riff, apparently from Gentle Smiles.
Oh, right. Which is also
Tribe Called Quest Butter.
Right, exactly.
I wanted to ask, had you heard the Gary Bart's part before you heard the Tribe Called Quest part, or vice versa?
No, I heard the Tribe Called Quest part.
Oh, okay. Now, have you heard the Gary Bart's one yet?
No? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Now, did you have to get permission, or it's just musicians riffing?
Get permission
folks
for
do?
What? to play a succession of notes.
Okay then.
Nah, that's just a scale.
Okay.
Plus, it happens live. I didn't sample nobody.
Right.
You know, if stuff was that kind of minute, there would be a lot of jazz musicians doing the jazz musician.
Exactly. Because that's been going on forever. You know, people have been doing that forever.
You know, people taking people's licks and stuff like that. And
I mean, it's actually a show of admiration. It acknowledges
exactly.
That they really appreciate that artist.
Right, exactly. And it's definitely not my intent at all to rip off somebody's stuff or, you know, but because, you know, that Raise Up Off Me is also another title. It's really speaking from Jupiter, rearranged differently. I called it Raise Up Off Me because I like the new improved version. I retitled it because I was reading the Hampton Hall's book, Raise Up Off Me, at the time. And that's why I titled it that.
Excellent.
Which is very fitting. And I did what jazz musicians have done throughout the lineage of jazz when it comes to their tunes and aliases and naming. I didn't do anything outside of the realm of tradition. But No Filter is basically that. I wanted to document my working trio that I've been working with for going on 3 years now. I wanted to document them, and I wanted to document how we sound, and I ain't want no popping circumstance and none of that. You know, like the original cover, that ain't nothing but a selfie, you know? And I mean, really, I didn't want no extra stuff. I was just calling No Filter.
Exactly.
I wanted to have integrity with it.
As a matter of fact, the recording sounds like, you know, No Filter. Everybody's just playing, you know.
Yeah, no, we playing. Yeah,
this
it's
is what you
face.
Get.
It's
right.
Wham, bam, thank you,
right.
Bam.
Right,
you know, like. And on top of that, the way it was mixed, I didn't want it to sound all like, and eventually mastered. I mean, I had a hip-hop guy master it, because I didn't want it to be all kind of like some old dinner time kind of sound and stuff. You know, I wanted it to be in your face. Like, because I was chasing energy, you know, I'm chasing energy, which is like the way the music feels. I wanted to make you lift up out of your seat.
Right.
And just get with it.
That it definitely does.
Yeah.
This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar and My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is tenor saxophonist and composer James Brandon Lewis. What you're listening to right now is Raise Up Off Me from the James Brandon Lewis Trio, their latest release, No Filter, 2016 VNS Sessions. James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Luke Stewart on electric bass, Warren G. Trey Crudup on drums. Before that, we heard another selection from Days Freeman, Epilogue, Brother, 1976. And before that, we heard Waiting Child in the Motherless Water from James Brandon Lewis's 2014 OK Records release, Divine Travels. That's James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, William Parker on acoustic bass, and Gerald Cleaver on drums. After our On the Bandstand segment, we heard I Remember South Africa from the release Moments, James Brandon Lewis, 2010. James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Neil Kogan on guitar, Ben Shepherd on bass, Robert Holiday on piano, John Shabalin on drums and percussion, and their guest artist, Aaron Chavez on percussion, Nate Cohn on trumpet, Kevin Robinson on tenor saxophone, and Brandon Sherman on trumpet. We have a little more to share from James Brandon Lewis, so stay tuned. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
That record is about probably as close to how we sound live. I mean, we go even further out when we live together, but that, I'm proud of that record.
That's all the more reason why people should come and see you live.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, live is where it's at.
That's right.
You know, but...
Now, on the recording, that is you scatting on the closing ballad, Bittersweet.
No, that's not me at all. That's,
Somebody Nicholas. Wrote somewhere that it was you.
Yeah, they were
lied.
They were completely wrong, which tells me that they weren't paying attention.
It was Nicholas Ryan Gant?
Yes, it's Nicholas Ryan Gant. I went to Howard with Nicholas. He's a phenomenal vocalist.
And I generally don't care for falsetto, but I was digging that. It's not like mousy falsetto. It is exactly smoky.
Yeah.
It's a nice falsetto.
Yeah. No, he really is an amazing vocalist, and I was just really happy to have him involved in my project. And over time, I'm going to have more and more of my friends and colleagues over the years be involved in my projects, because I think it's important for people to know the depth of the individuals that I know who are my age and who I've interacted with and who I respect. And he's definitely one of many that I truly respect. One hell of a vocalist.
Could you tell us a little bit about the group you co-lead, Heroes Are Gang Leaders?
Yes. So Heroes Are Gang Leaders was basically founded after the death of Amiri Baraka. I had the esteemed privilege to open up for Amiri Baraka, myself and Thomas Ayers Ellis, in 2013 at St. Mark's Church. Well, that was probably one of the days I got super nervous playing for Amiri, someone who I had read his book while I was a student at Howard, Blues People with Required Reading, my jazz history file. Someone who's heard the whole lineage of the music, kind of like, well, what am I going to play that he hasn't heard? But I played, and it was. But then when he passed, poet Thomas Ayers Ellis and I decided to start this group, Heroes of Gang Leaders. That title is based off of one of Amiri's works. And from there, we've just been honoring the legacy of poets. We've covered Bob Kaufman, Etheridge Knight, Wendell and Brooks, Inta Zaki. And with that group, I say we have recorded to date 3 albums.
Wow.
No, actually 4 albums. One of them isn't released yet. One of the albums, well, we have a tribute album to Amiri, to 2 discs. Set, but it isn't out yet. We've been trying at least 3 or 4 years now, trying to get this album out to no avail. But we have 3 albums, one of which includes Thurston Moore and Lydia Lunch.
Oh, wow.
That was recorded. And then I also have a duo record coming out with Chad Taylor. That'll be out in 2018. So we recorded that this past either January or February. And
okay.
So that'll be out 2018. And that's a good album, too.
Now, recently, Heroes Are Gang Leaders, though, was part of the Vision After Dark series in New Blue that Arts for Arts had.
Yeah.
How was that? I actually heard that Andre 3000 was interested in coming through.
Oh, wow. No, that was a beautiful experience. We had a good time, and that's another group that I'm able to use my compositional voice in a different way and can explore my curiosity as well. But it was cool. It was a good time. We had a good time, and more good time ahead for that group.
As we get ready to draw to a close, anything you want to share with the WBAI listening audience that we may not have discussed?
Nah, thank you so much for having me. I definitely appreciate what you're doing and giving me an opportunity to share, and it's been cool. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Hank Williams, our associate producer, for sitting and chatting with
you. Hank.
Yes. Right. Do you have any dates coming?
Yes, let's see. Heroes of Gang Leaders is playing the Kennedy Center.
Wow.
Millennium Stage. Yeah, we're playing there July 28th. And then Heroes of Gang Leaders also has the Bowery Poetry Club. That's July 30th, I'm going to say. Nothing right now on the books for the trio, but, you know, any day, anything could happen. So my website, www.jblewis.com. You can find me on Instagram at James Brandon Lewis, and Twitter is JBLewis1983.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for adding that lovely information that I almost forgot to ask.
And I'm on iTunes and all that kind of stuff, Spotify, Pandora, all that stuff.
Excellent. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, James Brandon Lewis.
Thank you.
For spending this lovely time with us. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening was James Brandon Lewis. What we're listening to right now is Say What? From the James Brandon Lewis Trio and their latest release, No Filter. This is a BNS Sessions 2016 release. James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Luke Stewart on electric bass, and Warren G. Trey Crudup on drums. Stay tuned. La Nueva Alternativa is coming up next. Sugar in My Bowl will be back on July 9th. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.